Yeah, we are really happy to be here today and be able to share our experiences with you that were like a present to us, because we had the possibility to stay several weeks and months with our compas zapatistas in Chiapas, which was really, really special for us and still is, and still is moving us a lot and making up new ways of thinking and acting, and it is really important to us to share this experience with as many people as possible. Especially also because the Zapatistas gave us the task, what they also called like a little light, like a little flame, that we should share with as many people as possible, so that their words and ideas and emotions can be shared and also put in practice in other parts of the world. So yeah, it is really hard sometimes to share these experiences, because they are not so theoretical, they are really coming from the heart, and we really had to experience that it's sometimes really hard as Western people to speak from your heart, that that's a language that you really have to learn, and that was a big struggle, and it still is. So I want to read a little bit from our text, our reports, that we were writing throughout the whole time we spent there, every week and all the months too. We wrote down everything we experienced, so that you can also read it and that it's shared by as many people as possible. And there was one moment right in the beginning when we arrived in Mexico City. We got welcomed by supporting structures of the Zapatistas. We stayed with some of the compas some days there in Mexico City. We arrived at Dia de los Muertos, so everything was really special. And there was one moment that has the title, ¿Qué dice tu corazón cuando luchas? What does your heart tell you when you're fighting? And I want to read a little bit from this moment, from this experience, so maybe you get an impression of how it was for us to get to Mexico. That will be hard to translate, but maybe later I can give you the text and you can do it afterwards, because it's a lot. It is not easy to recount all the impressions and experiences, because our stay in numerous Zapatista villages with the work in the milpas, the meetings with the compañeras, the visits to schools, cattle collectives, the insights into internal assemblies, or the long conversations with the juntas and the gobierno still has an effect and were very intense. The various individual conversations with children, old people and young people who told us about their life in autonomy and their understanding of resistance also left many thoughts and stories. We hope to be able to share these with you in the best possible way. At the moment, we are still at the very beginning of our reflection, so we would like to ask ourselves and everyone who will read this text a question that a compa gave us at the very beginning of our journey. As a young, well-read, intellectual person from the city, he once wanted to join the Zapatista guerrilla structures. When he presented his request to those in charge, he was asked this question. ¿Qué dice tu corazón cuando luchas? Pues nada, no me dice nada. Entonces no luchas bien. Tienes que sentir algo cuando luchas. What does your heart say when you fight? Nothing, it says nothing. Then you are not fighting well. You must feel something when you are fighting. Experiencing how emotions and feelings were shared with us there, the warmth, solidarity and trust we encountered, and the openness of the people who shared their knowledge and experiences with us, makes us think a lot about how we ourselves relate to each other. What we experienced gives us opportunities to reflect on our own structures. Because we were shown a political practice that encompasses all areas of life and relates every deed, every feeling and every idea to the goal of autonomy and struggle for it. From our observations and the question that the compass addressed to us, we take a lot with us, from which, above all, questions arise that we have to ask ourselves. What are we actually fighting against and what for? What are we really prepared to risk and what commitment do we make in the struggle for a better life? How willing are we to organize ourselves in a binding, consistent and responsible way over a long term, even identified period of time, and to gear our lives to this? How can we defeat the egoism and individualism within ourselves? How can we manage to bundle our often very isolated forms of organizing and think more in terms of connections instead of delimitations? There are still many questions that have grown within us in the course of this journey, and whose answers we would like to find in the work that lies ahead of us, which will emerge from the journey. But we will not find them alone, because that is exactly what this journey has made so clear to us. We move forward questioning, with the open heart and the will to share all our knowledge and learn from each other. As one compass said, ideas or next steps are born in our hearts, thought in our heads, and spoken from our mouth. So this part needs time and continuity, so that it can flow from the depths of our hearts into a shared practice. Again and again, the compass told us how important it is to work practically and to dare to take steps into the unknown, but with a clear goal in mind. Essential in this process is the right to make mistakes. I think this question, ¿Qué dice tu corazón cuando luchas? It was really like a red line going throughout the whole journey and really moving us a lot inside and also in our discussions. And I think it also, when we got back to Germany, it made us clear that many of us sometimes don't even know what they're fighting for. They kind of lost the connection to their visions, to what they really want to aim. And we really felt that in this moment, that when we left the territory, we kind of felt super lost. We didn't really know how to orient ourselves again in this other world, how the Zapatistas call it. So throughout all these experiences and emotions and discussions we had, arise many questions also about our political praxis. Why are we organizing so many demonstrations, and are they actually leading to a better life, or are we just kind of keeping ourselves busy to not really have to question ourselves? And what is actually important at the moment with all these crises that are all interconnected, with all these wars, with the climate crisis, with the war against women and queer people, with the war against indigenous people? How can we go the path in a different way and connect these struggles? I think it's questions that always arise inside of us, and it's sometimes really hard to find answers. And I think what we really learned there was that we really have to focus more on praxis. And that's kind of something we want to share with you, how our experiences through all the whole time were dedicated to this topic.
Okay, I see some people in the back. There are still some places in the front, so if you would like, you can come to the front, still. And I wanted to ask if there's another person maybe to support the translation into French, because I feel like it's hard to translate. Yeah. So maybe we can find another person so that you can do it, that can help you. costs a lot to do it for 2 hours. So if there's someone who can translate it from French, is it translating afterwards?
¿Alguien que no entiende el inglés? ¿Alguien que puede traducir entre inglés y español? ¿Hay en la esquina? ¿Se puede escuchar? Todos que hablan español, aquí en la esquina hay traducción al español. Aquí en la esquina al francés,
Est-ce qu'il y a quelqu'un qui peut traduire en français?
Ok. Und die deutsche Übersetzung ist hier.
Hier. Okay. I'm going to give you like some sort of a structure for the presentation we have. First, we are going to talk about how the idea was born and how we found each other. We were 10 people and who went there, and I just want to be also transparent to you who we are and where we come from. Then it was really hard for us to do this presentation because these 3 weeks were so intense and we got so much influence from the Zapatistas. So we tried to break it down for you in like the organization of the autonomy, and especially there were 3 pillars, the education, health and production, which are very important for the life, for the autonomous life from the Zapatistas. And that's also what we learned there. So it won't be like a presentation generally about the Zapatista. We just try to that you come with us on the journey and that we just share our experiences. And also when we look at the current situation in Mexico and the mega projects there, it's important to us that we also discuss and exchange how we can like build a new practical international system. Yeah, because it will get worse. Yeah. So that's the how we structured it. And we also are at the book fair, and then you can also come to us and discuss with us later. Yeah. Is the speed okay or too
difficult?
Yeah,
And if there are questions during the presentation, please dare to ask anytime. It's a lot of information in very short time. We don't know if you can make it actually, but it's still really important to us that you can always ask questions and then we just change the presentation from there.
I would like to tell a bit about who went to this journey. So we went with 10 people from Germany to visit the Zapatistas on their territory and to visit them in the villages. And most of us were taking part in the organization of the Ciudad Zapatista when they came to Europe in 2021, this is 3 years ago. So we are 10 people coming from, I think, 4 different five different places in Germany. Our age is from around 18 to over 60, so the age was a big priority. And also from the political background, we came from different backgrounds. So anarchists, anarcho-feminists, from forest occupation, from organizing the cities, community work. So we are really coming from different backgrounds. What brought us together was the Tierra Zapatista when they came to Europe, and the curiosity to get to know how they organize their economy. So we found together, and we asked the Zapatistas. So we would be interested to get to know the civil structures of your economy, and can we come by? So they said yes, come around. And so we decided to really go there. And we flew to Mexico City, took the bus down to Chiapas, and from there we went to Caracol Morelia, where they told us to come to. So that was the only information we had beforehand, come to Caracol Morelia. So we did so. So maybe that you can kind of, you know where we are at the moment. Not everybody knows so much about Mexico. We went to Chiapas, which is the most southern state of Mexico. It's at the border to Guatemala. And politically, it's important to understand that Chiapas is one of the states where most of the peasant groups and villages are. So most of the people are working on their fields, are planting maize and milpa, corn, and most of the people are very poor in a capitalist way, not in a social and cultural way. And so there's a lot of racism inside of Mexico with the indigenous peasant people from the south. The industry of Mexico used to be, or still is, in the north of Mexico, but now they want to open up the territories in the south because it's where all the resources are at the moment. 75% of the water is there. The biggest forests after the Amazon are in the south of Mexico. And all the ancestors from the Maya people are living there. So several different indigenous groups are still living there with their own culture, their own languages, their own indigenous practices. And it's really important to know that in the context of the fight of the Zapatistas.
That's also true. Yeah, I didn't say it like this, but it's also true. They speak several languages. Most of them are ancestors from the Maya, but they have really different ethnic and cultural roots.
All right, I'm going to continue to tell you how where we went and how our journey went. So you see the San Cristobal, this is the left dot over there, and this is where we arrived and then went to the Zapatistas from there. It's the Caracol Morelia, which is in the middle. And there we arrived and stayed there for a few days, and then we got presented the kind of program for the next 3 weeks, and we visited 3 zones from the 13 the Zapatista had, and went to three different caracols. The caracols are like the infrastructure points for the different zones. And the second one was Macau, which is low. And the third one was Papua Nueva, which is next to the Ocasungo. And from there we slept at the caracols. From there we visited the villages with the collectives, with the schools, with the production, and this is where we got to know the life in the autonomy. Here you have like the whole area of the Zapatistas. In general, it's like 13 caracols, like with 13 zones. In 2019, it was only 5 zones, and then they extended it to 13 zones. And you can't imagine the Zapatista territory like a closed territory where you have like front lines with the state. It's like more like autonomous islands in this area. So it's a lot of military in this area, and we're also going to talk about it later. It's called the War of Low Intensity, and we also saw a lot of military there. And I'm going to continue with the first caracol we visited. This is Morelia, and there, like 2 days after we arrived, there was one Zapatista who gave us like an overview of how the organization of the autonomy of the Zapatista works. So I tried to break it down for you. It's like he talked, I think, for 3 hours or something, so you can talk a lot about it. But okay, slow down a little bit. Okay, so one very important principle of the Zapatista is that everything goes from the base, so the pueblos. And also all problems are solved on the lowest possible order they have. So when you can just like have a conflict with someone, then you try to solve it with the people who stand next to you. And you have to imagine the area. There are many villages, like small and bigger villages, and a few villages are one municipio, and a few municipios form one zona, so one zone. And as I said, the zones, they have caracols, like you can imagine them like infrastructure points, and where they also have their the
political administration.
Yeah, the political administration. They talk about the bad government from the state and the good government from the Zapatistas. Yeah, one thing which is very important, they don't have like politicians as we know them, like you go to the election like every 4 years or something, and then that's everything you can contribute. The people who are in the good government also live in the villages. So they often go like 2 weeks to the caracols, make the administration, and then they go back for 2 weeks in the villages. So that's how they don't get like politicians. You don't know what is going on in the day-to-day lives of the people. And something they also formed new was like the interzona. It's like the connection of the different zones. Because they realize when they get help from outside, it always goes to the same zones. And a few of the zones didn't get as much help or knowledge from outside, from the Zapatistas, and that's how they coordinate all of the area. And yeah, you can go on.
One thing, so you have the political representatives in all those levels. So you have the political representatives in the villages, in the municipios, and in the zones. But the important thing is that they are not making the decision. So they are working the stuff, and then they bring it back to the pueblos, to the villages, and they decide whether they agree to the proposal or the proposal needs to be in a
vote.
It's a very good question. The question was how many people are living in one pueblo, in one village? That really depends. I think it's also a really important point to understand. Sometimes in one village there's only one family that is Zapatista. Sometimes the whole village is Zapatista and it's like 30 families or 40 families. Sometimes it's a really small village, so you can't really say it in general because it's always really different. And that for us was really surprising, that the autonomy is something really fluid. It doesn't have like a border at one village or at one municipio. It's really like connected with tiny small structures and really, really big structures. That's really important to understand. Yeah.
And how are these decisions made in the pueblos? So is it like they go to an election forum, or how is it?
I think with the decisions we will talk about later, huh? About the political structure.
Like maybe just one thing is like you can't say that Ross had a question in mind when we went there, and you can't say there's like one way the decisions are made. It's like from pueblo to pueblo it's like different. Like how it works best for them. Yeah.
What we can shortly explain is we had one experience where we were honored to take part in one assembly. And it was a really interesting process, which afterwards maybe we can have a little room talking about it, how it really was. But we figured out, or we had to admit, that we don't understand how they take decisions, because it's something in between consensus and vote by majority. And it's us that always put these things into concepts, but it doesn't work for them. So that's really special, and yeah, we can have a discussion maybe afterwards. And maybe that also leads well to the 13 demands and the 7 principles. As my comrade already said, also about the organization structure of the different levels, one of the 7 principles is bajar y no subir, so always going down and not wanting to go up, which is also really showing how people are not becoming powerful. It's like a mechanism to avoid power. And there are hierarchies, definitely. I mean, it's a military organization. There are demands and orders from up. But the strategies they have to avoid power structures are really impressive. So one example is the Tequila Zapatista. We talked a lot to Compass that were in Europe, and they told us now for the next years, they have the task to go to the little villages and talk to all the people in different ways about their experiences. So until this process has not led to the fact that everybody in the Zapatista autonomy had the possibility to understand what happened in Europe, how the experiences were, what it shows them, to discuss it, their task is has not been ended. So that's one of the things that maybe make it more visually what it means to go down and not to go up. You really have to go from one house to the other, because the people in the base, they have to work every day. They don't have the time to think about all the political structures and decisions every day. So it's the responsibility of the people that have the cargos, which are like the responsibilities they get from the base, to fulfill these values. So maybe that that shows one of the principles. One of the 13 demands is land. Land has a really great meaning to the Zapatistas, not only because they had to fight for the land and take it back from the landlords, from the colonizers, but also they have a saying that only the people who work the land are kind of the people who are taking part in the land and take responsible for the land. La tierra de quienes que lo trabaja. It's also from the Mexican Revolution, and it's really important to understand that there is a really deep connection, and it's their way of making revolution every day, taking responsibility for the la tierra and plant corn and calabazas and what grows there. So for us, it was a really important experience just to understand that working the soil and taking responsibility for forests, for plants, for animals, that's already a really important political act. For justice, we have the example of the revolutionary women's laws. It's also a huge own subject, so maybe we can also talk about it in another time. But they were formed already because before the Zapatistas started their war against Mexican capitalist state. So it also forms a really, really important part of the autonomous base. And the women really had to fight for it. So the justice is not only justice with the system outside, it's also justice that has to be gained inside. And now we want to ask our comrade if she can maybe talk a little bit about the military structure, since we don't really know a lot about it.
So, actually we don't know anything about the military structure of Zapatistas. It is an underground organization, completely underground. We know some faces of Zapatistas when they are in an action or in a meeting they're speaking, like Subcomandante Galeano or Subcomandante Moises or any other famous face which you see, but actually all these ranks like commandant, etc., they are civil state, civil situations. So what happened, the difference between Zapatistas and the others is not because they are Democrats. It is very clear that it's a military organization, so it cannot be democratic. I can remember one interview with Subcomandant Galeano, with some Uruguayan journalist. They asked him exactly the same question, if they are organized democratically. And the answer is, anybody who tells you a military is democratic is lying. That's not the question. The question is that if you look at historically at the revolution in El Salvador, Nicaragua, or any other South American countries, you see that the militaries have the right to take the mandate. They are the commandants, they decide what to do, how to do. In Zapatista movement is the other way around. So the civil society decides if the military part has to do any action or not. It means if the Zapatista wanted to, they didn't have any military confrontation, open confrontation since 94. Even the 94, it was asked in every village how they think if they have to rise up or not. So the villagers decided they want to rise up. In this moment, it's like they change the situation and militaries decide militarily. The tactics of military tactics, how to do it and where to do it and how to attack or not. So it means you have a structure in every village, they discuss it in like a big assembly, we want to resist against our big project. If the government comes with the soldiers, what should we do? Usually, the experiences in Latin America and much other countries in the world shows a military, a guerrilla organization make an action, they go back, the army comes, and who pays are the people who live, who are living there. Zapatista, as I told you, turned the situation so the people decide if they are ready to take our responsibility. It means the military part of the organization is not the part who decides if they do something. They decide how to do it. The other thing is that if you are part of the military, it means you are not part of the social structure. The social structure, they talk, it's like from the bottom to the top. They are civil people. They are peasants. Everybody you know in the village, usually they have the right of speak when they are 12 years old. So you can go to a company and talk. If you are 12 years old, you have the right, and at this moment you have responsibility. So the democracy and responsibility are the two sides, both faces of a coin. And this part is the decision, how everything works. It means you go to a Zapatista village, you never see a gun. Although if you know everybody is armed, but you never see it. So this militarization, like, is to make it civil, is very new kind of making policy. So we know, as I told you, in Central America, which is like some hours by car to the other side, in Guatemala, which it was a guerrilla in the forest of jungle of Petén, you have seen the militaries are there and everybody is moving with a Kalashnikov in hand. In Mexico, it's what you don't see. You never see in a Zapatista village or in Punta de Gobierno somebody is walking with a gun. This militarization is on the same time an answer at the whole situation in Mexico. So the whole situation in Mexico is militarized, and they try to show you can be different. And the military situation is you have some people which they started, like the sixth person who started 40 years ago to build Zapatista organization, ZZM. They are military, they don't live in villages, they live in their camps. And you have, on the same time, milicianos, which it is like milicianos in the town. They are peasants, they got their gun if it is necessary. They make military courses, or I don't know how to call it, but they got military trainings, but they are not actually military in their own life. They are civil people, they may marry, they have children, they have normal life. These two parts are like two parts of a machine, because you have a very small guerrilla organization, they call it insurgentes, and you have a bigger part, which it is like in every village, like promoters, they call, they speak later on about promoters, and you have milicianos. People, they came to Europe, maybe some of you have visited them, lots of them are milicianos. Girls who are milicianos, and they are prepared to go to the war to defend their territory if it's necessary. All this construction, the milicianos are under the construction of military power, but the civil society has its own. What we talk, actually, we are not, none of us is a specialist. We've seen in our travels, last time, we had just the luck to be there last year there. What we are talking about is what it was our own experience, not much.
As you can see, there's a lot to tell, but we are really short in time. So that was our time, basically, when we arrived in Morelia. So we're still trying to get you with us to the journey. So we arrived in the Caracol Morelia, and while we still didn't know what's going to happen in the next week, we received this education about how exactly the capacity autonomy works. So then we get asked to join another meeting, so we never knew what's going to happen, so we joined another meeting. We realized, oh, it's a lot of people here. Then they told us, okay, we have asked
our compass from the Caracol Morelia, where we have already been, from the Caracol Tulancao and the Caracol Patria Nueva to come here. And we made a plan, what we would like to show you. They asked us what we would like to learn, and so they proposed a plan what to do. So the first stop they proposed was to go for 1 week to the Caracol Tulancao, which you can see here on the photos. So we arrived in Tulancao, which is one of the new caracoles. So now there are 13. Now there are 13 caracoles. Until 4 years ago, there have been only 5 caracoles. So they had a restructuring of their administrational organization. So Tulancao and also Patria Nueva are two of the new caracoles. So we arrived there. Everybody was really excited that they can receive guests. And we were lucky to arrive there during an educational session of the healthcare workers, promotores de salud. So health is also one of the demands of the Zapatistas, and it's one of the areas they are working already really long. So they prepared to organize their own health system already in the time before they did the uprising in 94. So before they did the uprising in 94, they already organized themselves for 10 years in the clandestinity. So they already organized themselves in the mountains to take care of their health. So basically they in these times they mostly worked and still a lot to do with plants, medical plants. They know their territory really good. They know the plants. They are working with the soil, with the plants every day. So they are collecting the plants and making their medicine out of the plants. But with the time, they expanded their knowledge about healthcare, and now they have 4 areas in the healthcare system they're working with. Still the medical plants, then there is the medicine you can buy in the pharmacy and so on, like the chemical medicine. You have the midwives who are taking care of bringing babies into the world. And and huesteros, like the people who are working with the bones. So if you get an arm broken or something like that. So in all those 4 areas, they exchange between the villages, between the zones, between the municipios in these areas. But they also work between the areas really close together. So they exchange between the areas and they start with the medical treatment with plants. And if they see, okay, it's not working good enough, they add other treatments. So there's not a like separation or competition between the tradition of treatments, but it's a collaboration of the different ways to cure. And yeah, it's really special, the healthcare system, because you need to know that in the like villages before, people needed to go 3 hours by car, by horse or walking, even longer, to get to some place where they can receive medical care. So what the Zapatistas did is that they, in all the villages we have visited, there is now a casa de salud, so a house like for a healthcare house, to treat the like basic illnesses like diarrhea or I don't know, like basic things. Then you have, in each zone, you have also clinics, like they can cure more, like worse illnesses or injuries or something like that. It's really important to know that especially the justice system and the healthcare system is something which not only Zapatistas are using, but also non-Zapatista, indigenous people living in the villages or close by, because the healthcare system is not for profit. So you maybe need to pay for the medicine, or you need to pay for the medicine, but you do not need to pay a lot that someone is getting rich out of it. And people working in the Zapatista healthcare system are indigenous people, so they speak the indigenous language. Very often, people from the villages cannot receive their healthcare system advices in their languages. So that's something really special. So people also join in these institutions to receive the treatments. Yeah, I could talk a long time with it, but maybe we can go on. But it's really special that they manage during the years that in every village, every zone, there is a good healthcare system. And well, still there's a lot of injuries or like more. Good afternoon.
It's really blocked with the Spanish. It's really hard to speak.
Like really like difficult diseases or injuries. I don't know. So there are things they cannot treat themselves. They are still in contact since the beginning with solidarity doctors from outside their territories and outside the villages. So also there is still the connection, and they learn from each other, with each other, and yeah, step by step trying to build their own healthcare system.
So now stepping to the next topic, I hope it's not too fast. We will, as we said, only mention a little bit about every topic, but then afterwards you can ask questions. What is really important to know is the Zapatista women's fight since day one, we can say. Also one of the six founders was a woman, an indigenous woman, and we also had contact with the different women's collectives in all the villages. All the villages have their own women's structures and collectives. So here on the picture you can see the women's collectives making bread, having their own vegetable gardens, and they prepare the corn for making the dough for las tortillas. And it was really nice actually to have spaces where we could talk only to the women, because patriarchy and machismo are still existing also in the Zapatista structures. But what we can say from our experiences, they're really aware of it and they're really trying to fight it. But it's a complete different way and form of feminism that maybe we know from Europe or United States. And that's really important to know and also to respect. We can't put our own understanding of feminism on feminism practiced by indigenous women. Also, the topic of queerness, it is discussed. We also met queer people, but it's completely different than in our own discussions and also political spaces. For us as Flinta people, it was sometimes really nice to have spaces where we could talk only to the women, because it changed completely. When the men were in the room, most of the women didn't dare to talk a lot, even though they're in really, really high responsible positions. Normally, it's always one man and one woman, so it's really tried to be fair and just. But you can see that it is really a change that started only 40, 30 years ago. So it's really difficult still for many of the women to be strong, to take their position, to speak out loud in front of other people. And also we as Flinta people, we could really feel that sometimes we were treated a little bit different than the men in our group. So we had these spaces where we could talk to the women and where we could share about sexual violence, about experiences as mothers, and also how it is to do political work with children. And that's something that was really moving us a lot, because the children are always present in all the parts and works and spaces. They're always children. So it also gives the women the possibility to take part in everything. And I think that's one of the biggest differences that we as Flinta people could also experience, is because we know that many of us that have children are really excluded, and it's also because they are read as women in our society. So we had a lot of topics to share with the Zapatista women. And what is also really special, they have their own laws, and they're really also respected in the political practice. So it's still an ongoing struggle, and they also know that. But I think in many points they aimed a lot more than we did, because they do have firm political positions, and they have their own laws, which, yeah, is something that we don't have. Still don't have. And what was also really special is that they told us that they feel so much safer after being part in the organization, because all sexual harassments or violence against women are being put to a case. There is a justice system that is also being organized and thought through by women that is taking care of these situations. So it was really showing us also and giving us a lot of strength to see that it is possible to build up a system of justice that appoints also these cases of sexual violence, and that also men are taking part of it. Because the Zapatista women always say, we need to fight for us, we need our own collectives, but always together with the men. And I think that's also something that we were discussing a lot, because in our feminist structures, sometimes we're really fucked up by men and we don't want to talk to them anymore, or we just want to have our own spaces and not always being confronted again and again with all these problems. But it really made us realize that maybe we have to think about it again and find other solutions.
So we're holding it really short. It was two aspects of our first week in Tulancao. Then this week was already over, so they said us, well, you are here 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, you're going to see three caracoles. So we went back to Morelia. And we had the chance to see more about the zone in Morelia. And maybe some of you know it. The 17th of November is the foundation date of the ETA del N, so of the Zapatista military organization. And we had the luck to be there in November, so we joined and were invited to join the celebration of the foundation of Itzatele Ende. And this year it was really special because also Corona has taken place in Mexico, so they didn't have a lot of big meetings in the last years. So what they did was to invite from all the villages in Morelia, people, especially young people, to come there for several days together, and they did some education. So they had one day, one education about the foundation of the, is it foundation? Founding? Foundation? Of the Itzatele Ende, which means to know about the past, to know about how was life before they founded the Zapatista movement. So they were talking about the times of the fincas, where German, Spanish, other European people came and grabbed their land, the continuity, you know what I mean, of colonialism, which was taking place, still is taking place. And the really, really bad living conditions without water. They were not allowed to live down at the waters. They needed to live up in the mountains where there's no water, so they mostly had no water to drink, to wash themselves. Like, a lot of them did not have one tortilla a day to eat. We were talking to one old compa with his daughter, who's already the age of us, and he was like, I needed to fight. I needed to fight and to organize because I had my baby girl. And we were like walking around and trying to find one tortilla a day to feed her. And sometimes it happens and sometimes not. So, yeah, and I mean, we could talk a lot about these times, but it was really, really, really bad and really violent living conditions in these times. So that was the circumstances how you see here in the picture, six people came together in the mountains of Chiapas. And some indigenous peoples, other from other revolutionary movements before, and came together and decided, okay, well, we're going to try here to organize and to make a stop to this really cruel living conditions. We want to say, ya basta, it's enough. Yeah, so they prepared for 10 years in the clandestinity. They went from one place to another to find out, okay, who are the people we can trust, who is working close with the finqueros, who is not able to keep secrets because they're an underground organization. So they were really going from place to place and asking people, so how are you? How is your living condition? Are you satisfied? So most people were not satisfied. Yeah, and so step by step, really like talking from one to one to one person, they were growing. They started with six. Everybody was talking to one person and convinced one person, so they were already 12. All the 12 went and searched for other people they can trust, so they were already 32. Yeah, and so they were growing. Now it's a movement from like several thousand people. And I always like to start with the beginning of movements because starting with six people, we are already more than six people here in this room. We still have to figure out what we want and how we want to do it, but we are more than six people.
Maybe it's nice to talk a little bit about one anecdote. It was really special for us also to sit there and feel like what it's like to be educated in a Zapatista autonomy. So especially it's according to the young people, because the young people don't know what it was to fight for all this. And it's really a problem also, because capitalism is really present there. Many of them have cell phones now. Many of them can watch TV. The narcos, the organized crime, is really trying to take out the youth from there and put them into organized crime also. So there's lots of really big difficulties at the moment. And one way of showing the young people that it is important to fight and that fighting for a better life and fighting for justice is an everyday task. And everybody has to participate, from the really small children until grandmothers and grandfathers. So they had to sit there and listen. And that's also something we always did. We had to sit there and listen and try to understand what they tell us. So many of the older people who were taking part in the 10 days war and also in the clandestinity, they were sharing their own stories. And that's something for me personally was really special, because we could understand how important is storytelling and being connected to our ancestors, to the people that were fighting before us, that are still fighting and that really have a great vision. And in these moments, I think we could realize that sometimes we don't have that. We are not connected to all the people. We don't know who was really fighting in our countries. Maybe in Germany, because of all the Nazi regime, we don't want to be connected to our grandparents, because we really have this fear of reproducing the same shit. And I think that's something that we really saw there, that it is so important to have this, all these stories and people in our backs and in our memories, to also have the power to keep on fighting. And that was one of the most important points of these educational hours, that the children and young people and also everybody else was sitting there and listening to the stories. And it was stories of war, it was stories of violence, but it was also stories about lots of laughter and fiestas, how they call it. They always say it's so important to gather and to know that fighting is also alegría. It's, I don't know how to translate it, it's like joy, yeah, it's joy. To have this joy and to keep on fighting, and not only remembering the hard parts of it and all the people who had to die for it, because that's also something that is really present. People have to die in these wars. It's not possible to have a peaceful war in such a violent system. But we will always remember them. On that day, they were all put there. Their names were put there. And also in the 1st of January, at the day when they started the uprising, they were all being put there and remembered. And even the small children are learning about that. So I think that's something that really inspired us to tell our own stories and to remember that many people before us were fighting, and that we are in the same line of trying to vision and create a better life for everybody.
Maybe one last thing also about like the joy. They also, like, what amazed me a lot, they don't like separate all these things. Like, for example, here we have, like, now we're talking to you, we are very serious here, and like later there are the concerts and there we have fun. For example, at the 17th of November, where this education was, they saw that the people are getting tired and they just had a band. And they made like this, and the band came and like played two songs. And then everybody was awake again. So I think that was like a really nice example on like how you can, like, how it's not like this is the hard fight and we are all just suffering, and this is like the joy that that it brings us. It's like one sticks to each other. Yeah,
and also maybe one last anecdote to the joy. Because it was really impressive. So what they were telling, one compa was telling me, is like, because I was telling, okay, sometimes we miss the joy in the fighting, at least in Germany, or in the groups I've been in Germany. And they were like, what? Why? I mean, our comrades died in the fight that we can live in dignity. And dignity is carried by joy. You cannot live in dignity if you don't feel joy. So it's our, not duty, but it's to responsibility, and to honor our comrades who have fallen, to live and enjoy our lives. because it's hard enough. We do not need to talk about all the time it's hard. We all know it's hard. We need to share our joy that we have the energy to go on. Yeah, so I'm still carrying this. Yeah, it gives me joy. I try to share it.
Next time we bring a band with us. Okay, yeah, another thing we also witness a lot there is the production. It's a big part of the life because, as Rumi already said, it's like a traditional farmer pueblo. And of course, like, it for me it just made sense because, like, there where you are working, there you also put yourself in relation to the nature, to the other people. So they're really hardworking people, and they have like many different kinds of production. So, for example, here you see the coffee production, the coffee beans, as well as here. And yeah, one thing is like for the coffee is one big thing. Maybe you already know like coffee Libertad and stuff like this. But it's also a lot for exports. But the main thing about the production in the autonomy, and that really opened my eyes, is that you gain independence when you grow your own food and when you know what you're eating. For example, they like the traditional way of farming there is the milpa. It's right here. It's corn with pumpkins, beans, and beans, yeah. You eat a lot of beans. And in like nearly every every village, there are farmers who farm the milpa. Sometimes they also like grow fruits and stuff. Yeah, for example, one comrade there said to us that, for example, they like drinking cola or Coke, I don't know, yeah, Coke. And but when the capitalist system collapses, or you don't get food from outside, they can survive. We won't. We don't have our own food growing, or in like, especially from the cities, we don't have our own food grown, and we are so dependent from the capitalist system. And that was really something we took with us from there, that this independence also from production and also the independence of every section of life is so important that you cannot just like concentrate on one thing and like consume all these goods from the capitalist companies. And in the first assemblea we were, we all said where we are from and what we are fighting for. And then like one comrade said, and from what organization are you from? And then we were like, we are not from one organization. We like want the same things, but we don't fight together. And this also what they told us. You have the same destinations where you want to go. So it's very important that you have one organization where you can structure yourself and where you also can, like the Zapatistas in these different zones, where they can organize the autonomous lives. And yeah, maybe also, yeah, we also saw a lot of cow collectives, which they have there. And they also have a very pragmatic way on dealing with problems. For example, at the 17th of November, at the anniversary, they had to pay all the bills for the cars to get there. So they just have sold some of the cows so they can pay it. And they also have tiendas at their... tiendas is like shops in the caracoles and also in the villages, where they also sell the produced foods in the autonomy. Yeah, and maybe something important is also to mention that as I said, it's a very important part of the autonomy, so the production. So they also have collectives which are only for children, for example, where they can produce their own goods and also learn how to take care or administrate the money they make, or how they, where they put their food. And also for the women, as Rumi already said, it's also, they always told us it's very important for them, also as from a social perspective, because the work is there where you get in the relation with the other people, and this is also where you can like share experiences, and where it's not like in an individual society, like you work together, you fight together, you work together. And it's also just a duty there, or not like, like kind of a duty there to work. For example, when they're, when they need to harvest their food, also the children from the schools come and help and also learn about the farming, and yeah.
I would maybe add some infos. So the collectives where they work together, they are like one of the backbones of the autonomy, because with this production, with the collective production, and the money they are getting out of, for example, selling the coffee or the corn or the bread or whatever they are producing, they organize the money to pay the things they need for the autonomy. So everything is going back to work. So by their own work, and they're working really hard, by their own work, they make it possible to organize the money, for example, to build the healthcare, the health, like the hospital or the school, or to organize the money for their representatives to go to the meetings, I don't know, 4 hours by car and to go back. So everything is organized and paid by this collective work. And this also means that in each level of the civil structures, in the villages, in the regions, in the municipios, and in the zones, there are collectives which are working, and the money goes to this level. So everybody in the village is working in the collectives of the village. In the common collectives, all the women in the women collectives, the children in the children's collectives, to organize the money to pay for what they want to have in their autonomy. In the level of municipios, from the villages who are part of this municipio, there are, I don't know, a specific number of compas who are going to work in this collective, in the level of the zones also. I think you understand the concept, but it's really important because it's the backbone. And I think... okay, it's not that clear then.
Maybe to explain it in a really short structure. So there's a difference between collectives for the whole community. There's a community collective in the villages. There's a community collective in the municipios, where people from the villages come and work in this collective. And there's also a collective, for example, a cow collective, that belongs to the zone. So if they want to celebrate the 1st of January, they need a lot of money to pay for the musicians, to pay for all the bills that will be made. So they ask to the collective from the zone, because it's like the upper collective, to sell 3 or 4 cows, so they have the money for this special event. Maybe in the municipios, they need to build, I don't know, some structure. Then they can ask the collective of the municipio to sell a little bit or to give some money from their box, and they can afford that. So in each collective, in each level, you have your own collective, but all the people from all the villages are supposed to work in these collectives. Then they have their personal work. So in the picture where you saw the cows, that was a cows collective from one of the villages. So all the men from the village are taking care of the cows, but some of the cows, maybe half of it, belong to all the different families. One family has maybe two cows, so when there is an urgent health case in one of the families, they can sell one of the cows and they have money, but they get also supported by the village collective that maybe also sells one cow. So that's really important to understand, that there's collective structures belonging to all the people, and there is your own personal work, so you can have a little extra money. And that's really fluid. Is that more or less clear? Okay.
And maybe also one last thing about the collectives that we saw, for example, here, like very big collectives with like 50 or 60 cows, but also in the villages. In one village, for example, there was a car collective with just two people who were taking a care of the car. And I think that was also like really eye-opening for us, that like every little part, like it can be just two people taking part of a car, is a collective and is very important for the autonomy. And also everyone in the village also said it's important that these two people were taking care of the car. Yeah. Because like sometimes here you just like forget the bigger look on why it's just important what you're doing right now. And for example, also in every assemblea we were, they like first talked about why we are here and what we are talking about and what we are fighting against. And yeah, this was really inspiring also for us, that you see what you're doing, and yeah, just don't do just anything, but like to be focused on what is, yeah, and also give meaning what is important. Yeah. Okay, then we, we go on with Patro and Nueva. This was the last caracol we were. You see here the caracol, and one thing we're also going to talk about it after the education is that it was very it was a reconquered land from 1994. So the big owners who also made the slavery from the ancestors from the Zapatistas, and they reconquered it. So I think it's a big meaning, like at the place where this oppression took place, now they have the safe organization. And yeah, need this.
So what we also got to know in Patria Nueva and also in the zones in the Caracoles before is about the education. We already talked about it during the celebration of the 17th November. It's also a form of education to come together in the big moments. But they also have their schools and school system. And it's a bit like comparable to the healthcare system. So beforehand, there were not that many schools in that area. The teachers were mostly not talking in the native languages they are speaking, but in Spanish. Or they showed up drunken or didn't show up at all. So there was really a bad situation with the education. And so the Zapatistas began to organize their own educational system. And in all the villages we were able to visit, they have now a primaria, like primary school. And it was like in every village is the primary school, and in every municipio there is like the secondary school. So that's like how far they have come until now with the educational system. There are no universities or something like that for that. They need to go to other places still.
And what impressed me most with the educational system is that every promotor de educación, like every teacher, and also almost all the students could explain you why they are learning exactly this knowledge or this skill. What does it mean for the autonomy? Why is it necessary to live, to continue to live in autonomy, or to even like build it more up, the autonomy? And it's something which impressed me really a lot, because I sometimes feel in Germany or in Europe in general, we have access to information endless. We have access to endless information. But what would our curriculum look like for a primary school, for a secondary school? If we want to live together in autonomy, what knowledge, what skills should we all know? What is the basic knowledge and basic skills? What should we all learn? And I think it will give us some focus to think about it in this way. Yeah, and it impressed me a lot, because the six-year-old compañerito could tell you why she is learning this and how she is going to support and continue the autonomy with that.
Yeah, maybe what was really impressive, in one school, there was one of the promotoras de educación. She was 14 years old. It was a really small village, and they needed somebody who were teaching in that school, so they elected her with the cargo of teaching and taking part already in educating themselves. So, of course, it was a huge responsibility for her, but it was also kind of an honor, and she was supported by all the older people that she can also take this responsibility. And that's something we experienced a lot, that young people and people that are not used to be in higher positions or in positions of responsibility, they get really supported by everybody else to be able to fulfill this task. And I think that's also something that we learned about solidarity in a really practical way. And it's also, for me, an important part of the compañerismo, what they say. So it's something in between solidarity and being comrades and friends. But it's also helping each other to do something that you maybe are not able to do at that moment. But you get supported until you have the power and the strength to take this step. And that's really something we were really amazed, because we experienced it in everything, in all the different areas. There were super, super young people, also people in the junta that were 70 years old, taking decisions that were, responsible for all the life from all the people in the villages. So I think it's really important that we also think about that, why in our structures it's mostly the same age and the same abilities also that are organizing stuff, and why can we, or what does need to happen that we also take serious people that are more on the outside maybe.
I've seen there are already some questions. We're going to come to that in 1 second. I would like to add some things. Because what Romy said, I think we didn't mention it before. Romy said, and then this young woman was named by the village to take on this responsibility. And that's actually the way how you get to the work you do. And I think if you really think and feel deeply about it, it's, at least for me, the most democratic thing I've experienced until now. Because when I remember my groups, mostly the tasks are divided in, okay, who has time? The quest or capacity? Oh, I don't have capacity, I'm not doing it. But there is the other way around. The question is, what is the task, what is the responsibility, and what do we think is gonna do that work good? Who do we trust with that, with this task? And then we name this person and we decide collectively, okay, you, I trust you that you're gonna make this. And you have our help if you don't know how. You're not alone in it, but you have the responsibility. Yeah, and I think it's like now it's with the education, it's the same with the healthcare or with other tasks. It's always from the base. And also, if you don't do your work in the way which serves the village, they're gonna give you feedback once, twice, but if you're not gonna change in a way, you also get rid of this responsibility again. It's not something like we give you as a present or something. So we are dependent, as the village, we are dependent on it, that you are doing your work in a good way with the 7 principles of good governance. You do your job, and if you don't do it in a good way, you get rid after a while of that responsibility.
Yeah, maybe 2 last things also to the education is that, as we already said, the education system is hardly new, and for example, many of the old people can't write and read. So the education is not just from the old to the young, but also the young educate the old. So it's more like also an exchange. And maybe 1 last story. We met a young health promoter, and he didn't even, he said originally he wanted to do something different, but his village said they need a health promoter. So they said, you are accused, you have now to do this task. And he accepted it because he thought, okay, it's more important that the autonomy works than what I want individually. And this, I think, is also maybe something we have to think about. Like, is it like about ourselves, what we want for ourselves, what is the best thing for ourselves, or is it something that helps us to the way to get to an autonomous life?
I think that's actually the base of the question of freedom. What is freedom? Is freedom individually or collective? And for us, that we are really grown up and socialized in a very individualist way, it was so, so touching to really be able to feel that there is a way of having freedom in a collective way, where it's hard to take on a task or a responsibility. Sometimes it's not totally what you want to do, but it's maybe the price for feeling safety, feeling of being cared, of always having people around you that will take part in your life and will also notice when you're feeling depressed or lonely or whatever. And I think in many discussions and conversations we had in the nights, it was really that it was the time where we most could feel peace and community in most of our lives. It was feeling more at home than in our own families. And I think I could even start to cry, because it's really something that says a lot about our way of life, that even though we are comrades and we're friends, we can't really take care of each other, maybe in a really responsible and committing way sometimes. And I think it's also an example that this is possible, that there is thousands and thousands of people that already reached this goal of collectivity and really, really believe and practice a collective freedom. And I think it gives us a lot of strength and hope to keep on fighting also.
Okay, I would give the room to the questions. I think you had 1 question? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the question was if the approach of education of the oppressed was present there or not.
I think, I mean, it is all a process, and what we experienced is the information from the base, so we can't really say if they were discussing about it, but I'm pretty sure, since we were reading a lot about also, and we have comrades that are working with the Zapatistas since ages, of course it is a part of it, and also solidarity people from other countries really took a great part in developing the educational system. So there are influences from many different fights and educational approaches from different countries, and of course also Freire. Maybe you make an addition?
Yes, we had this one in Macau. We met in one school. We had a talk about the different influences and the in this like this school reference to how to live and to this kind of form of how to organize education from the base.
Okay, there is one question in the middle.
Yes, I'm interested if you can tell a little bit more about how the women deal with like the patriarchal and sexual violence. Like, how is the best? Mm-hmm.
We can try. Yeah, because like the just. It's a huge topic, it is. Yeah, and it was really special to talk. We have been in one. Women assembly of the zone, and mostly there was the place when we talked about it, and also in some villages we asked, and also to find out what is the situation there. Yeah, and like what most women told us is that there had been a lot of sexual violence, especially before they founded the organization, and that it changed a lot with the organization, especially with the women laws, so that they came together and to write down what do they need to feel safe and to feel free to live a free life. And one of the laws is that alcohol is forbidden. Alcohol and drugs are forbidden everywhere. If you're part of the Zapatista movement, you are not allowed to drink alcohol or to take drugs. And it's if you do it, there are like quite hard charges for it. Charges are with work, so you need to do communal work. They're like really one of the where you get like high amount of work to do after it. So to find out what do we want and what do we need was the first step. And to get the, to have an organization which says we will not accept it. And they know it. They know that if there is violence at home, that they can go in every village. There are women and men who are responsible for the justice work. They can go to the women and say, or in the women collectives also, in the social spaces which are coming together, not for this reason, but just to do the work, you exchange about what's the situation in your home, and then you get the help from the
people who does harm, like sexual violence. Mm-hmm. Like here, the most people go in prison. We have now the social justice, but it's
sometimes. So what we could experience was not violence against a woman, but one case of violence against a child. And we have been in the Caracol, and they don't have prisons like here, but they have like cells, like one or two cells, where they bring the perpetrator for the time they try to figure out what to do. So they talk to the perpetrator, they talk to the women, the family affected, they talk to the community and they try to figure out, they investigate what's going on, what has going on, and they find a solution together. So it's not like here that there is a judge who is telling you you did it and now you have to face this sentence. It's not happening. This compound knows if you want to be part in the organization, it's forbidden. And if you do it,
you make this mistake once, but you're not going to repeat it up and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, then you're out of the organization. It's the last step, but there's a big interest to stay part of the organization. When you're part of the organization, you have access to land, you have access to the collective work, you have access to the education, to the healthcare, to everything. So there's a really big motivation to stay part in this organization. And you know, you have the back, like the organization is behind you. And it's not, it's, I think it's a big difference in our structures that we do not have anything to, like, which motivates to stay in this organization, to not do it. Yeah. And also, yeah, maybe like this, we could talk about it. Yeah, more or less. We can talk, you can ask us a lot.
Okay, there's many more questions. We still have one topic in the presentation. Maybe I will try to do it quickly and then we open up with all the questions. Because it's a little bit about the actual the situation at the moment and the defendance of land, territory and culture. It's really important to know that there is a war going on in Mexico, not only in Mexico, but especially now in Mexico against indigenous people. And now, especially in the south of Mexico, there have been attacks to the Zapatista communities in the last weeks by paramilitary structures that are being formed by state. There have been injured compas that had to go to hospital and almost died. And the pressure to the Zapatista communities is growing every day. When we were in Patria Nueva, it was still peaceful. Now the attacks started there. So only half a year ago, the attacks are already on that high level of violence. And that shows that us in our analysis that capitalism is in a big crisis and capitalism needs to destroy everything that wants to create new systems of a better life for everybody. And the Zapatistas are one of these examples. And also their position geographically makes them really being in a very dangerous situation because where you see the downer part, it's where all the huge forests are, the Selva Lacandona and Selva Maya. So there's a lot of resources. And at the moment, they are building the Tren Maya, which is a mega project that is, the government and the president, AMLO, says it's a tourist project. It will connect all the beaches, the touristic places with all the archaeological sites from the ancient Maya culture. It's even called Tren Maya, which is pervert because, I mean, none of the Mayas will have a big approach from it. It is just what they tell us, a genocide for them. And it's even connected to another mega project that is here in the center. The area is called Istmo de Tehuantepec. And they are building the Corredor Interoceanico, Interoceanal Corridor. It's supposed to replace the Panama Canal because it's drying out at the moment. So this situation, to make it really clear, is affecting the whole world. It's affecting the whole geopolitical ways of how you import and export stuff from China, from United States, from Mexico to Europe. So it's really changing a lot of political structures. And at the moment, the militarization in the south is getting crazy. When we were there, we could experience that also in San Cristobal, which is a tiny little, very touristic town, there are now tanks rolling around, there's armed forces everywhere. And just a few weeks ago, they stationed 5,000 militaries just close to Palenque, which is the closest stop of the Tren Maya to the Zapatista area. So what we think is that the Mexican state wants to put a lot of pressure on the Zapatistas so they take up their arms again and then Mexican state will have the they can provoke a war against the Zapatistas and all the indigenous communities that are defending their territories. So all these places there, the forests, the waters, the waterfalls also, the animals, there most of them are in indigenous areas where land is also being worked collectively. And that's also something that capitalism wants to destroy, because then when they have taken their territories, they have to work in the capitalist sector, like in the hotels or cleaning or construction work or whatever. So it's a really hard way and really violent way of neocolonialism. And we experienced in one of the Zapatista pueblos that 10 families decided to move to one of the parts close to Palenque, to some waterfalls. It's called the Siete Reyes because it's like 7 waterfalls going down. It's impressive. It looks so so beautiful. And they moved there without knowing each other. It was decided in the junta, like the administrational level, that people need to move there to defend the land. It's maybe comparable a little bit with the forest occupations in Europe, that you really have to live at the place to be able to take care of it. And that's what these families did there. They had lots of children. They were planting corn and everything they needed there. They had animals there. And that was their way of resisting and defending their territory and land. So it was also touching us a lot because it showed us that the defense of land and territory, it's not only important there, but also in Europe, also in the United States. I mean, the last forests in Europe are in Romania at the moment cut down, and not really a lot of people know about it. And what the Zapatistas and also other political movements in Mexico always told us, we are defending our territory, but we are also fighting for you, because you are also depending on these forests. You are also depending on this water. So we have to fight together. We have to connect our fights. If we don't do that, we don't have a base of fighting against the capitalist violent system. And that's something we also experienced after that, because some of us stayed in the Zapatista communities 3 months. And after that, some of us got prepared for an internationalist caravan that was organized by the Congreso Nacional Indígena. It's an organization really close to the EZLN. And many other indigenous communities are taking part in it, not only from Chiapas, but from different states. And they are really in high danger at the moment because of these mega projects, because of the militarization, because of all the multinational companies that are starting to take out all the resources there. And most of their leaders and activists are being killed at the moment, and nobody knows about it. Because the capitalist system of government, the organized crime, and the multinational companies are all working together. So it's really kind of the biggest enemy you can elect for your struggle. But I mean, our comrades, they can't choose. They have to defend their land, so that's why they organized the caravan, to make it visible and to also show us that we need to find new ways of building up anti-colonial struggles and share our knowledge and fighting together, because most of the companies are from here. It's Siemens, it's Deutsche Bahn, it's companies from Spain and France that are building the wind parks there. So we, from the heart of the corazón de la bestia, how they say it, we have to start fighting against these companies, and we also have to build up our own structures, because otherwise they will not have a chance to survive. And that's something that we shared afterwards in the caravan, and it's also really connected to the Zapatista struggles, because they will be super affected by the militarization in the Tren Maya, And there were already 2 days of actions now, a couple of weeks and days ago, because the Zapatistas are really depending on our solidarity and not only sending pictures. We really have to do something practical. And that's also maybe something that we want to end now, this discussion. And yeah, also tell you again that for us being there and being able to feel the autonomy and see what it is in practice, it gives us a lot of responsibility, because we can't close our eyes anymore about everything that's happening there. But it also makes us think a lot about our own structures. It makes us think about how we want to relate to each other, to be stronger, to be more connected, to maybe not think so much about our differences, even though they are important, but to focus more on what unites us. And that's really a big struggle that we are fighting here, that the Zapatistas were also realizing when they were in Europe with the Gira Zapatista. They were saying, like, sometimes you focus more on if you're being an anarchist or a communist or whatever, but you kind of lost your vision. You lost it a little bit. Who is actually the enemy? And I mean, there it's quite clear who's the enemy, because if you don't find the enemy, you're being killed. Maybe not all of us in the struggle at the moment, even though with the war in Ukraine, I think we should actually get more closer to this idea that our normality is not stable. It's not something that will exist forever, and we have to be prepared. We have to really organize ourselves. Even though if we are anarchists, we have to find ways of putting our forces and powers together, because otherwise we will fail. And I think that's a really clear analysis we got from there, and we hope to be able to discuss with you also critically about these topics, because that's also the task. We need to share our perspectives and also abilities to be able to go one step further.
Yeah, maybe like one last thing. We have like this little book where we also wrote down all our experiences. Like, we sat there till 12 or 1 in the evening, in the night. So it's very unfiltered. If you want, like, as you saw, it's very hard to get this like in 1.5 hours or 2 hours. And yeah, you can just read more about it.
Okay, and I'm really sorry. I saw all the hands before with all the questions, but I would say that we come to an end, not because after us now, 2 comrades and Compass from Mexico are talking about the situation of the mega projects in Mexico, and I would really not like to take their time when they're here. But we do have an info standpoint, whatever, not info point, like, you know, where all this book, at the book fair, we do have our place. You can get all the brochures, and we can talk about all the questions if you like. We are there, and we are happy to share and to discuss about it. And one thing I would like to pass forward is, like, we have been in really a lot of villages, and in each village, when we said goodbye, the Compas Zapatistas told us, okay, it was really nice to get to know you, but give all our love and all our hugs to all your comrades which cannot be here at the moment, because it's not about you and me. It's about fighting together, and let them know and let them feel that they are not alone. They are never alone. We are fighting here in our geography, in our territory, and you're going to fight in your territory, and we know about it, and makes us strong. So I hope you can feel all the hugs we received for you over there.
Yeah, now we will open up the space for our Compas from Mexico, and also we will share a little bit more about our experiences of the caravan. So if you're interested on the topic, please stay here. And then also, we just decided after 4 o'clock, we will wait there at the door. So if people from you are interested in like the practical approach and what we are doing already, because most of us are organized in different groups that are really trying to fight against all this shit. We can connect there and maybe have a little discussion round or whatever, or also find another place in the next days. And yeah, you are all really welcome. And please, if you have time, stay here, because our comrades from Mexico know a lot more about the situation. And I think it's really a big chance to have them here and to connect personally with them, so we can build up anti-colonial struggles together with them.